You're listening to Journals of the Willing from the Tumbling Saber team, a part of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. Check us out on the web at starwarscommonwealth.com, on Facebook, iTunes, and Twitter, and take your first step into a larger world. Hey everybody, welcome back to Journals of the Willing. I'm Kyle, and no Steve this week, so I'm flying solo. That's right, you're stuck with me. It's just you and me, guys, this week. So, what are we doing this week? So we're going to take a look at Star Wars locations. Roughly 180 pages of glorious overindulgence on the nerd scale. This book came recommended to me by our good friend Dave Donovan. He blew my mind via DM with a couple of picks, and so I knew that my life wouldn't be complete until I got my hands on this book, but given that my Amazon wish list is about a mile long, what I had done is I took a couple options. Actually, I'll back it up. I was committed to getting Rogue One on vinyl, the soundtrack. I love that soundtrack. I continue to devour it day and night, so that was a must, and I had just enough left from my Amazon gift certificate to grab something else. So I had my mind set on some more Star Wars concept art. I think Joe Johnson has a book, and I could have squeezed that in with under my gift certificate allowance, or I could have gone the extra mile and gotten Star Wars location. So I put it to Twitter, and the illustration book was winning out until the very last second. It pretty much pulled it out in a buzzer beater. So I respected the wishes of the people. You know, we're a democracy here, I like to think. And I think it was actually literally by one vote. The Star Wars location book won it out. So I added that to my cart, punched checkout, and a few days later, the package arrived. So I've been meaning to get to this book for quite a while, but it took me some time to really go through it and appreciate it and make a bunch of notes for you guys. I don't want to go through the entire book. I want you guys to eventually get a copy of your own and see what kind of gold nuggets you guys can pull out. But this book is definitely one that preys on the truly twisted, obsessive Star Wars fan. And if you're listening to this podcast, if you're listening to a Star Wars podcast about books, chances are you are an obsessive Star Wars fan. So I'm going to say that this book is probably up your alley, without doubt. So like I said, it's about 180 pages, and covers everything, basically every location from episodes 1 through 7. So no The Last Jedi, no Rogue One, which is a little bit disappointing, but understandable, of course. Nobody over at Lucasfilm would want to spoil anything from those movies, even though Rogue One may have, we may have known a few things about Rogue One by the time this book came out. Like I said, obviously I'm not going to go through it all, but I'll give you a few locations here, and I'll give you just a quick taste of what this book is like, and I'll give you my take on it, and that'll be it for this week, guys. So we'll kick it off. It starts out with a layout of the galactic map, and these 2D maps are kind of cool, but they always kind of frustrate me because you just don't know. There's the across the galaxy and the up and down, but what about the depth? The maps always tend to make you think everything is happening on a flat plane, but that's not quite the case. So as much as I appreciate them, they do leave me almost as confused as they did before. But they also do provide a glossary of all the planets that we see through episodes 1 through 7. And wouldn't you know it, many of them are very similar in diameter to our Earth, at 12,742 kilometers. If you didn't know that before, now you do. Kashyyyk, for example, checks in at 12,765, so just a shade bigger. Naboo is 12,120. Coruscant is 12,240. Now, imagine the disgusting amount of overcrowding, given its estimated population of 1 trillion, which is also laid out in this book here. 1 trillion people. Come on, man. Takodana, Utapau are also right there with Earth. And of course, there's a few bigger ones and a few smaller ones. Starkiller Base, as we know, is a lot bigger than the Death Star, but would still only qualify as a small planet. And 660 kilometers is the tail of the tape there. So yeah, it also tells you the length of each planet's year, whether it has moons, its the population, and its location, whether, you know, in the core, or the mid-rim, the outer rim, etc. And like I said, those are laid out on the map for you, so you can kind of get a general sense of where things are. And some of the locations are surprising, like Tatooine and Geonosis being virtual neighbors. Those kind of things, if you're like me, those kind of things would really interest you as a fan, seeing, oh, cool, I didn't know those two planets were so far together, so far apart, or so close together, whatever the case may be. But anyway, moving on to some of the maps here. We get one of the Mos Espa circuit, which details the pod racing circuit. And if you thought it was dangerous on screen, you got to check it out on this aerial view map. It is absolutely hazardous to your health. So shocking nobody there, but it plots out where each racer crashed. And one of the cool things is that Beggar's Canyon, famous Beggar's Canyon that we've known about for 40 years now, is part of the pod race circuit. So there's that. Moving on to Theed, the hangar where Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan battle, there's a really, really cool reference in there to anybody who's read Empire's End or the Aftermath series as a whole, but certainly Empire's End. There's a caption in there about Palpatine's interest in deep pit design. So if you have read Empire's End and you know about what's been going on Jakku and what's really relevant about that planet in the Imperial scheme of things, that's a little tiny tie-in. And there's all kinds of those little tie-ins throughout the book. Just little things that don't fundamentally change how you look at Star Wars, of course, but just one of those, I get it moments. Really, really cool. Next we've got 4 full pages that outline in some really staggering detail the route that Anakin and Obi-Wan take while tracking down Zam Wassel through Coruscant after she has an attempt on Padme's life. So that's really interesting, and it kind of corkscrews and twists and turns and goes up and down, of course, as Obi-Wan falls through the sky and Anakin goes to pick him up. All these different, you know, the droid and the speeders and this and that, all of their different trajectories are mapped out. So it's really cool to look at. And then right after that, we get a spread of the Outlander Club, where, of course, the Jedi catch up with Zam. And there's nothing too crazy here. You know, of course, it's just your typical Coruscant nightclub. But something I thought was worth mentioning. There's a back room that has these little tiny cramped sleep pods for gamblers who get caught up in really long games. And it says that, you know, some of the games can last for days. So I think there's probably a lot of people in the Outlander Club who probably should go home and rethink their lives. I thought to myself, you know, toughen up, guys. If you're going to gamble for a few days, you know, economize your time, suck it up, and just be like those kids in China who stay up 36 consecutive hours and, you know, don't eat, don't drink, and just die in their chair for the glory of their role-playing game. So I don't know what's going on at the Outlander Club, but you know, I think these guys, I think they're soft. These gamblers, they really need to up their game a little bit. No commitment. It also, the sleep pods also reminded me of that episode from Seinfeld where Kramer had these Japanese guests who found accommodations in Kramer's four-tiered dresser. So those of you who remember that episode, you'll get it there. That paints a little picture of the Outlander Club for you and the accommodations they keep for some of their more addicted guests, so to speak. So moving on, there's a bunch. I'm going to just plow ahead really quick here. We do get some stuff from Revenge of the Sith, but I'll leave that movie alone as there are so many of them. But we do... actually, you know, one of the things I got a real kick out of, now that I'm thinking about it, was comparing the different maps of Tatooine and seeing where events of the prequels took place versus landmarks in the original trilogy. I thought it was just interesting to note that in the prequel part of the book... So I guess I should have mentioned from the beginning that the book is sort of split, as you would expect, from the prequels to the originals, and then to a few locations from The Force Awakens. But of course, since Tatooine is such a prominent location, you do get Tatooine maps from different eras. So it was cool to compare the two and to see that you know, it points out in the Attack of the Clones era one, the Tusken Raider settlement where Anakin eventually finds his mother. And of course it loops out the whole trajectory of where he goes searching for his mom and where he eventually finds her. But then to contrast that against the original trilogy maps of Tatooine, and you can see where in the prequel section it's called Tusken Raider settlement. In the original trilogy part, it's just called Remains of the Old Tusken Camp, which, of course, is because Anakin trashed everything and everybody in it in his fit of rage. So one of the things I found really interesting, or actually one of the highlights of the book, for sure, being somebody who finds Empire Strikes Back the king of Star Wars movies, there's a 4-page foldout that expands Echo Base in a way I never thought possible. Now, I always pictured Echo Base as the main hangar where the Falcon is and a few X-Wings and the Snowspeeders. Everybody's just kind of doing the thing, fixing up the ships. Off in one corner, you've got Tauntauns with I guess, people trying to train them, domesticate them. And a few corridors, you know, to the medical center and God knows what else. But it's not that at all. It is a huge, sprawling complex. It almost looks like an ant colony with the intricacy of tunnels and openings and common areas and even bigger hangars where they have the rebel transports. Of course, we know they're there on Hoth, but I never considered to think where they'd be parked. I guess part of me assumed maybe they were parked outside. Those are pretty big rebel transport ships. Who would park them indoors? Well, apparently the rebels do. There's even Y-wings in there. It's really fascinating. There's a little, almost looks like a movie theater, but I guess that's more like a briefing room. But yeah, it's definitely one of the highlights of the book for me, and especially the scale you get it too. It's just this huge, beautiful 4-page foldout. If I had any sense. Actually, you know what? I'll leave the book in one piece, but part of me, I won't lie, part of me wants to just pluck that out of the book and tack it to the wall. It's that nice. So moving ahead to Dagobah, it shows us the location of Luke's various training sessions with Yoda. And the book specifies that Luke was on Dagobah for months. So if you've ever wondered, you know, what kind of time span does Empire go through? Well, I guess we get a bit of an answer here. Luke is on Dagobah for months. I never really considered it because I didn't think there was a concrete answer, but now we get a pretty solid one. And of course, months could mean anywhere from 2 to, you know, who knows, 5, 6, 7, 8 months. So he's there all that time with Yoda, eating that terrible, terrible food. I guess you get used to it after a while. Apparently your taste buds adjust. I'd rather not find out what root leaf tastes like. Thank you very much. And also that we see where Yoda's his escape pod is just kind of sitting in the woods, rotting. It gives really cool details about Dagobah and what makes it tick and why Yoda would want to be there in the first place. And of course, those who saw the Clone Wars Lost Missions, the ones on Netflix, you do get some of that. You get a lot of that, actually. But this book lightly touches on that, so it can fill the void that way if you've not seen those episodes. And then inside of Luke's hut, or sorry, Yoda's hut, we get some more details there. If you ever wondered if Yoda had kept his lightsaber, the answer is yes. He has it there in a little box. They made reference of that. But I guess it stays there because one of the other things it does mention is that soon after Yoda passes away, his little hut caves in, that's it, and it's just reclaimed by the Dagobah swamp, which is kind of sad when you think about it. And also, if you were ever wondering about the name of the beast that swallows and spits out R2, that's called a dragon snake. At least that's what I think it was. Dragon snake. What else we got here? What else we want to talk about? Jabba's palace. I'm really zipping ahead here. It's going to be a really short episode if you haven't noticed already. Jabba's palace is pretty cool. It's one of, you know, if I had to pinpoint a movie from the, or a part of the original trilogy that I could just skip over, it's almost the entire first half or the entirety of Jabba's palace section. In Return of the Jedi. I just find it so slow, so boring. The movie really doesn't pick up for me until Luke gets to Dagobah. Then things get interesting. But anyway, to see the way Jabba's palace is laid out, it's really cool. We all kind of build these maps in our head about how things are actually laid out in this galaxy that we love so much. But then you look into this book, and you see, my God, it's so much more detailed and not at all the way I had pictured. So Jabba's throne room is not, you know, I guess when C-3PO and R2 walk down that main hallway, when they first enter the palace, you'd think that Jabba's throne room is at the other side. But not quite the case, as you'll see if you ever pick up the book. It's quite elaborate. Really cool. There's lots of other stuff going on in Jabba's castle too. So check that out. And then of course, from Return of the Jedi, we also get the Death Star 2. We get the command tower of the Executor Super Star Destroyer. Ewok Village is there. Really cool stuff. I wish I could go through it all, but I don't want to spoil the book. I just want to give you guys a taste. And then I'll finish up here with a little bit from The Force Awakens. So we get a bunch of stuff from Jakku, as you might imagine, and more tie-ins to Empire's End, which, of course, the insatiable among us will really appreciate. It shows us the crash site of a couple of Republic ships and some of the Empire's last Star Destroyers, as well as the Super Star Destroyer that bites it in the sand. That is all given in this big overview map of the relevant section of Jakku that we see in The Force Awakens. I really thought that was cool. And then moving on to Maz's castle. This is the part that, for me anyway, had the two biggest mind blowers, without question. I haven't gone through this whole book. I haven't read it cover to cover. But, man, I will tell you, there's a couple of pieces in here with Maz's castle that we've talked about on a prior podcast. If you missed it, I'll go over that now. But first, it says that it describes Maz as a keeper of objects that call to her, which is interesting. You know, she mentions how, you know, she we all know that she's a Force user, but she doesn't really declare herself. She's neutral, I guess, is the best way to put it. She keeps objects that call to her, certain that they will call to others in time. So if that doesn't sound familiar or ring a bell, well, it should, and you should probably go back and watch The Force Awakens another 3 or 10 more times. Yeah, I mean, clearly, obviously, it's a reference to the lightsaber and probably other things she's got there as well. But the big mind blower, is that the room next to where Rey finds the lightsaber is a crypt containing the remains of fallen Jedi. I mean, we can have that debate again if it's singular or plural Jedi. You can't quite tell from the illustration, but it's interesting to note that her castle is built on a site of an ancient battle between the Jedi and Sith. So I imagine that the castle itself, you know, it was under Jedi occupation at one point, which is really cool. And you think about the timeline here. When you think about the Phantom Menace, when Ki-Adi-Mundi says the Sith have been extinct for a millennia, and then you think about Han Solo saying that Maz has had this watering hole for 1,000 years, and you wonder, is Maz's castle, could that have been the site of the final battle between the Jedi and the Sith? The numbers could possibly line up, give or take. Anyway, something to think about. And that is really the gist of it, guys. There's so much more to the book. So much more. I really gave you the barest bones overview as I could. I don't want to spoil the book, and maybe legally I'm not even allowed to. Yeah, I wish we could have had a map or two. If I had a couple gripes, I guess I could say I wish we'd had a map or two from Rogue One. You know, Scarif or Jedha would have been nice. I suppose some wise ass is going to say that, well, we got Yavin 4 in that book, so technically we did get Rogue One. And if you were here with me, I'd slap you in the face. I'm just kidding. I wouldn't slap you. I'd Charlie horse you. Oh, Vader's castle. What am I saying? Vader's castle would have been the place to see, right? To see all the different chambers and what's going on in that place. Given the level of detail that they go through in this book, goddamn, that would have been cool to see Vader's castle. But I guess at the end, you've got to save something for the follow-up locations book, right? I would have been nice also to get maybe a little tease or maybe just an expanded bit from The Force Awakens. Just give us a bit about Luke's Act 2 getaway. You know, that would have been nice. You know, whether you paint it as part of the Force Awakens section or as The Last Jedi tease. But again, the follow-up book, right? That's got to save something for that. Which is fundamentally why I tend usually to shy away from these kinds of books, because you know, they encompass a certain time frame, and then once you get one extra movie, well, that's it. This book's sort of obsolete. So, for example, by the end of this year, already this book has come out, and you know, there's nothing from Rogue One in it, aside from Yavin 4, you wise ass. So they'll surely at some point in the next few years come out with another book, another locations book. And I'm going to feel compelled to buy that one too, which I probably will, because I'm just a huge sucker for this stuff. So yeah, I guess that same criticism would apply to visual dictionaries and atlases. They all become dated. And then you have to buy the revised version once a few more movies come out. Kind of a pain in the ass, I think. Anyway, all in all, I recommend this book to those who really thrive on any and all details they can possibly feast on. Pretty much everything in this book is inconsequential. And I don't mean that to be insulting to the authors and the illustrators who did a great job. Like, this is really aimed at the Star Wars nut who just has to have it all, know everything, and just
Well, yeah, I want to know about the inner workings of Odo Gunga. I need to know how that city works and how their bubble technology works. Give me that information. And you get it in this book. If you want to know about how the Ewok village is laid out, well, you get that too. Really everything from A to Z as we know it, or not quite. As I said, no Rogue One. Okay, I get it. Yes, Yavin 4's in it. Jesus Christ, would you leave me alone? Anyway, so it's a great book, I think, to have on your coffee table and something to flip through. You know, during commercial breaks, just pick up the book and flip through a few pages and, you know, fill your eyeballs, feast your eyes on some great art, some really staggering stuff. Let me see here. Let's grab the book and tell you who did this book and give them some love on the show. So it's written by Kristen Lund, who did the episode one part, Simon Beecroft for episode two, Carrie Doherty, episode three, hey, James Luceno, episodes four and five, and Jason Fry, who did the Force Awakens part. And the illustrations were by Richard Chasemore, Hans Jensen, and Kemp Remillard. And there's a whole bunch of people who did additional stuff, and a foreword by Doug Chang. We all know that guy by now. If you don't, you should. So that's it, guys. Really, I do think this is worth the price tag, whatever that happens to be for you. And I would suggest that, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, it's because you can't get enough Star Wars. Otherwise, you would probably be out doing something else right now. So yeah, grab this, you know, fill your eyes, and it'll definitely give you a deeper appreciation for the world building that goes on in these movies. That you know, some stuff that we kind of take for granted. So that's it, everybody. That's the end of the shortest podcast in our relatively brief history. Thanks for putting up with me. I promise to do better next time. How was this? Was this all right? Was me for half an hour on my own torture? I kind of had fun. I hope you guys did too. But let me know if it's something you enjoyed, me just prattling on. Maybe I can add a little more content to the schedule against my better judgment. But anyway, it's super fun putting this stuff out for you guys. And to that end, episode 73 is right around the corner, and I'm really looking forward to getting back together with the guys and kicking around the latest from the galaxy far, far away. And we would love to kick around your questions. So if you have anything you want us to talk about next week, it's a pretty open schedule, so it'd be a pretty good time to do it. Email me, kyle@tumblingsaber.com. And we'll get your or you can, of course, DM me on Twitter or Facebook, and we'll get those questions into the show notes for episode 73. Thanks again for listening. Have yourselves a great weekend, and we'll catch you next week.
You've been listening to Journals of the Willing from the Tumbling Saber team, a member of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. Learn more about the network and its members at starwarscommonwealth.com.